On Robinhood Radio, it's time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage. David is a multimedia journalist with an online column at themediabeat.com and has reported since 2012 for the PBS network, mainly on ethical issues. He is also the author of a memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning October 11th, 2024. The media cannot miss that we've reached a telling juncture in the calendar with multiple points of significance. One, we're at just 25 days until the US presidential election. It's also, of course, a full year since the outbreak of the Israeli-Hamas war, following Hamas's unforeseen incursion into Israel, both death-dealing and hostage-taking, that led to Israel's massive onslaught into Gaza, along with another escalating front developing with Hezbollah forces to the north in Lebanon, and a wider threat of possible outright war between Israel and Iran. Plus, it is 2.5 years since the Ukrainian-Russian war broke out, with Russia's land-grabbing invasion. And meanwhile, it's 1.5 years since the Sudan civil war began, creating, besides innumerable fatal casualties, the biggest displacement in the world of human beings sent fleeing from their homes, 10 million refugees. What are the media making of the connections between these opposite poles of the news landscape, a crucial choice in leadership at home, and disastrous conflicts overseas? Well, that current calendar point at less than 4 weeks until E-Day has brought out the traditional, but to me, rather incomprehensible, almost futile decision by news organizations to endorse a candidate. It's mostly just print publications that do this, but do they really believe it's part of their function? Obviously they do. But whatever historical justification there may have been for such fanfaring of their partisan choice, it seems so irrelevant in today's vast and crowded media cosmos. And frankly, to my mind, it's little more than an exercise in bloated self-importance. Most immediately, I've seen the endorsement from my hometown's serious newspaper, the New York Times. That may be the best way to label it in comparison to the Murdoch-owned New York Post, the Daily News, and so on. And the Times chose, wholly unsurprisingly, to support Kamala Harris. The paper's essential reasoning is also no surprise, and it's crisply expressed. It's, quote, "The only patriotic choice for president," said the paper's editorial board in its headline, and its opening words were, "It is hard to imagine a candidate more unworthy to serve as president of the United States than Donald Trump. He has proved himself morally unfit." Oddly enough, though, the word "war" appears simply nowhere in this 2,000-word editorial. In a section that begins with the word "globally," the paper points out, though it's cased in very generalized terms, that among Trump's many disqualifying faults is that he's lavished praise on autocrats like Vladimir Putin, Viktor Orban, and Kim Jong-un, and he also threatens to blow apart our alliances with democracies. But you'd think, I would certainly think, that any analyst in print or electronic media would make the space and time to be more specific. They could point out that on the Middle East, Trump would doubtless, and despite some evasiveness during the campaign, revert to his stock position of totally coddling Benjamin Netanyahu. We only have to look at Israel's own media, say Haaretz newspaper or the Jerusalem Post, to see how stubbornly Netanyahu is backpedaling any previous movement towards ceasefire talks as he waits, in obvious hope, for Trump to be in charge again. With the Ukraine war, we can know with equal certainty that the ex-president's hyperbolic promise to end that war, even before his second inauguration if he were to win, would in fact be brought about by his simply siding with Putin. And about Sudan's catastrophic war? Well, no surprise here. There's no evidence that Trump cares a jot or a tittle about Sudan. Scour as thoroughly as you can through all of Trump's many and meandering statements during the campaign, and you will find nothing about that desperate, war-torn country. But there are many people, Africans especially, with strong memories of Trump in office when he dismissed African countries with an obscenity. It's a phrase that's hard to use in, can I say, polite media outlets like this one, and it's a phrase which the Associated Press has always had to paraphrase with the words, and I quote, "Trump used vulgar language to compare African nations to a filthy toilet." By contrast, hopefully, it would be salutary to know that any future Harris administration will be committed to resolving the Sudanese conflict. But disappointingly, it does not figure large in the Harris platform. There are signs, though, that the candidate is in favour of an existing plan from the Senate. A bipartisan plan, extraordinarily enough, in these polarised times. Once again, this set of proposals is something about which you'll have to look very hard to find any substantial media reporting. The senator's plan requires the State Department to marshal a joint strategy with the U.S. Agency for International Development and the Treasury and the Defense Departments to protect civilians from the violence. Tough sanctions against the combatant forces would be involved, and a ramping up of humanitarian aid to ensure it's properly delivered to vulnerable populations. It would also employ satellite imaging and open-source data to raise alerts whenever mass atrocities appeared to be imminent. There would in particular be specific measures to protect women and girls from sexual violence. So there's some hope, at least, that a Harris-run White House might actually implement such a plan. I suppose it's clear that the media beat is not in the business of endorsing either presidential candidate, but it would be disingenuous, actually just plain wrong, to say I'm being even-handed. The evidence I report on is too starkly imbalanced for that to be possible. But unlike some journalists, I wouldn't dream of telling any audience how they should cast their vote. In over 50 years of journalism, I have never, ever written an editorial. But I would like to say something about what I do write, for the Media Beat in particular, now that we've reached this salient point in the calendar. It happens also this week to be 20 years since the column began, as a weekly feature in the then very new daily paper AM New York. That title has since been merged with the Metro paper as AM New York Metro, quite a mouthful. And its ownership has changed over time from Tribune Newspapers to now Schneps Media. I parted from that first company quite early on, making the column independent and online, as well as starting the radio version here on Robin Hood Radio, WHDD. There's no coincidence in the timing. Back when the Media Beat started, its main subject matter was a general election then. George W. Bush was fending off a challenge from John Kerry, successfully as it turned out, giving W. a second term. The erratic course of TV debates over the past few months inevitably has prompted me to hearken back, in recent editions of the Media Beat, all the way back in history, as far as the very first such televised debates in 1960. My inaugural 2004 article also recalled how 1960's John Kennedy versus Richard Nixon contest was hailed as, quote, "the country's first television campaign." I took the opportunity then to assert that 2004 was turning out to be the first internet campaign. That too feels like ancient history. It goes without saying that five elections further on now, the internet is even more dominant a force in electoral politics. My 20-year anniversary is also marked by a change of venue. The Media Beat now appears at a newly built, freshly designed website. TheMediaBeat.com will comprehensively draw together the column and the weekly radio broadcast, plus, of course, the perennially available podcast. There's also a chance to see content about, and sometimes drawn from, my newly published memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter, which, of course, you can also see on Amazon. The new domain name in TheMediaBeat.com as opposed to the former address, themediabeat.us, also reflects a recent gradual but now definite change in geography. I'm going, from now on, to be as much based in Ireland as in the US. Of course, the Media Beat has always had an international outlook, but now we're formally swapping a merely national-sounding web address for a broader, internationally registering version. I hope you'll be frequent visitors to the new, wholly global venue. That's all for this week from the Media Beat in audio form. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.